We are back in your lives. It's an episode of Inside Boxing Live. We're powered by PPV.com. It's Dan Canobio. It is Chris Algieri. PPV.com is the worldwide leader in live pay-per-view events. Use them the next time you're going to order a big fight. Stream on your phone. Stream on your TV. Stream anywhere you can do it. That's what we do with PPV.com. No subscriptions. Live interactive chat. The best. The best in the game. They send us to all the big fights. I'm itching to go to a big fight. I'm itching for a big fight. We have a big fight this weekend with Boots and Stanionis, which will be a big part of this episode. But first, I have to say what's up to my co-host, Christopher. I don't know your middle name. Algieri.
Christopher. Oh, I'm getting the full name. I feel like I'm getting yelled at. I'm getting reprimanded.
It's an important episode.
It is. I mean, all of our episodes are important. If you want to stay completely up to date with what's going on in the world of boxing, because listen, stuff's going on all the time. Me and this guy talk so much, it's out of control. Like,
sad, actually.
Yeah, we're like an old married couple at this point. It's like everything that happens, like, hey, did you see this? And we're just constantly sending each other back things as they're happening. Yeah, but I'm good, man. I'm good. I'm coming to New York tomorrow. I'm excited for that. Flying in early morning, and then I got McKean's date with my partner in crime here, and then my nephew's fighting in the finals of the Ringmasters tournament, which I will be in the corner. I got my red book, I got my coach's book, so I'll be in the corner that night.
Do you think I can walk out with Michael?
Definitely not. They're super strict, USA Boxing, and especially MSG. USA Boxing is very strict, but MSG is like really last time I wasn't on the list, so I couldn't be even in the back.
What?
To see my nephew. Yeah.
I guess I'll just buy tickets like the rest of them. Support the kids. What am I doing? Yeah, what am I looking for? A freebie. I'm looking for a freebie to get into an amateur boxing event. Shame on you, Dan.
You know what? That's a good thing. And that's also why I don't steal pay-per-views, because it's very easy to do the stream. I never have. That's why PPV.com coming in is such a great partner for us, because it's such an easy place for me to just get every pay-per-view. I don't have to jump around from back in the old days, getting the Showtime pay-per-view, HBO pay-per-view.
Did you have a friend in the neighborhood who had the box, the illegal cable box?
That friend may or may not have lived above my head in my living room, but
wow.
We still used to buy them though, because we were supporting fighters. Like I was an up and coming fighter, so we didn't steal pay-per-views in my house.
What a segue by you, by the way. And yeah, if you're a boxer and you're stealing pay-per-views, like, come on, you're self-sabotaging yourself. You're biting the hand that feeds you. You know what I mean? And I did make a reservation for Keene's Steakhouse. Yes. I'm not going to tell you when the reservation is, because we'll get flooded with people trying to see us on the street, trying to get our autographs. We can't do that. You know, I cannot tell you what time we're going to Keene's, but
actually wears a fake nose and big sunglasses, big glasses now when he goes out. He wears a wig. It's such a sight.
You know, I'm not someone that has any fanfare. It's a niche sport, boxing. It's a niche sport. So maybe at a boxing event, I'll have someone come up. Hey, Dan, I like what you do.
You're being humble right now, Dan. You get stopped quite a bit at boxing events, of course, but you do get stopped quite a bit.
That's cool to me. But at the height of John Boy Media fame, and when we were doing the Blitzball, and I was out there doing a lot of Yankee stuff, I got stopped a few times at Yankee Stadium. And that to me was, that's like playing for the Yankees to me.
Right.
Like I was with my brother and some kid asked for a selfie, and my younger brother, Robbie, was like, is this a thing now? And he's like, it's like, I can't deal with this. He's like, I can't deal with you taking selfies at Yankee games with fans.
You were essentially an MLB player. I mean, you've touched the ring, dude. You touched the brass ring. You've been there.
But
you know, and
it's over.
Now you've come back to earth.
Yeah, it's over.
You have the experience now, and you realize that it wasn't all it cracked up to be. And now you're just trying to be rich. I get it, man. That's what happens to us. You're either obsessed with the fame, and you're constantly chasing that, or you touch it, and you're like, you know what? This is not really for me. I'm going to go back to grinding and making money.
That's right. That's absolutely right. Because I went to a couple of Yankee games recently. Anonymity. Yeah, it's a tough one. All right.
The only reason I can say that word so well is because I used to use it a lot back in my heyday of being popular in Huntington before I moved away and ran away from
you had to get away with it. Another hard word for me is familiarity.
Familiarity.
That's a really hard word. And it's a word that's used a lot in the boxing lexicon. Because if you say you're familiar, these two are familiar with each other because they sparred, they fought before. you can say familiar with each other to kind of get around the familiar. I can't even say the word. I speak for a living.
Just not showing well. You guys. You I mean, you don't speak well. That's
no, I don't.
We all know that.
I don't. I don't speak well.
But you don't have to speak. In this world. This is the beauty of being. I can put in my thoughts together.
Yeah. All right.
No, your thoughts are great. You just
thank you.
The expression.
There's a couple words, and yeah, I make up some expressions. That's part of the charm of this podcast, Inside Boxing Live.
Well, then they become T-shirts, and that's why people tune in because now the T-shirt, they're like, oh, that's that stupid thing that Dan says that doesn't make sense. Yeah.
Stay out of the DMs. Someone's already said they want a T-shirt with that on there.
It's on a T-shirt.
Yes, it is. Let's get into it. We will have a very, very heavy Boots Ennis, Stanionis preview on this episode, but we start with some news that happened after we recorded our last episode. Dmitry Bivol has vacated his WBC light heavyweight title, and the ramifications are pretty stark because it means that he is now going to fight a third fight with Artur Beterbiev sometime in October. This means that David Benavidez has now been elevated to full WBC champion. There were some thoughts that Bivol could potentially fight Benavidez. There was a purse bid that was scheduled. That is canceled because Bivol has vacated the title. Mauricio Suleiman is quite upset, and boxing fans are left to wonder, is this a duck? What does this mean for Benavidez? What does this mean for Bivol? There's a lot of ramifications here. So it looks like we're going to get this third fight between Bivol and Beterbiev. We kind of saw that coming. Benavidez, once again, is on the outside looking in of a big fight. He moved up to 175 to try to chase these names. And maybe he will get there. Boxing fans are funny because, we're not getting Bivol Beterbiev next. But it's like, guys, we could easily get it at the end of the year. We can get it next year. It doesn't mean that we're never, ever going to get it. At least I don't think. Boxing fans can be a little impatient at times without seeing the full picture here. But what do we make of this? This was a business move. This was not something that you should be too shocked about, but it has a lot of interesting narratives, a lot of interesting theories around it.
Yeah, I had a great discussion with Paul Malignaggi and Robert Garcia yesterday regarding this. We had a chance to talk during one of our Pro Box TV Boxing Scene Today episodes. And a lot of good points are brought up by both guys, as always. And it's so funny because Paulie and I are so contrasting. And then you get a coach and you get Robert in. And Robert is he's like Mr. Optimism. And he said exactly what you said. It's like, hey, he's like, all right, cool. These guys fight. He's like, I thought this was going to happen. And then guess what? The winner fights Benavidez next. And it was just like, yeah, that makes so much sense. But generally in other weight classes, that's never the case. Like, oh, Canelo fights this guy and then he's going to fight Benavidez next. No, that doesn't happen. But with these guys, very likely, especially if Bivol wins, he's going to go right to Benavidez. It makes so much sense. And it's going to happen because these guys do want to fight the best. Benavidez obviously wants to fight everybody. Bivol has ducked no one. So I think he's going to want to be the man in the division. He's got a sense of honor, does Bivol. If he does win, he's going to go to that. The issue is if Beterbiev wins, we're never going to see him again. He's going to retire most likely. He's not going to jump in there with a young streaking.
You don't think Benavidez, so?
Most likely. I don't think so. I think
a lot of money there.
Even this fight. But this is the cash out, I think. Now you got three fights with Bivol and you've made a ton of money. You won the first one, second one, I'm sure you made even more. Third one's going to be that much more. But in terms of this fight happening, the duck out of question. Get throw that shit out of here. These guys, Beterbiev or Bivol, they're not ducking nobody. Those Eastern Europeans, they're not ducking anybody. These guys are hardcore. They have honor. They have respect. They want to be the best. They believe they're the best. There's no ducking at the highest level at the 175 division because of all the guys that are up there. But in terms of this fight actually occurring, I think this was always the plan. I truly believe that this was always going to happen now for a couple reasons. One, Bivol's not going to leave that money on the table. Beterbiev might not be around. So if he goes and takes a Benavidez fight in between, Beterbiev goes, you know what? I'm not waiting around anymore. I'm getting older. I don't want to go through camp. I don't want to maintain this my shape until the next camp. I don't want to take a fight in between. And he goes, I'm good. I made enough money in those last two fights. So that fight never occurs. So there was an urgency for Bivol to grab that last bag with Beterbiev. So I think that him kind of going that way and saying, hey, I'm going to fight David Benavidez. And then Turkey goes, no. Come back over here. It's a negotiating chip. Now Bivol comes back to the table and goes, I mean, I could go that way. I mean, it won't be as much money, but I kind of want to go that way. I'm going to get a different look. And then Turkey throws out an extra couple shekels. Boom. Then we get the fight. So it's a very smart move from Bivol's position because he won the last fight. Most people thought he won the first fight as well. So his negotiating power was only increased by bringing David Benavidez into the fold. And unfortunately, David Benavidez constantly gets used as this chip.
Yeah.
The poor guy always gets pushed to the side, always gets dangled. But I do believe he gets the winner of this fight either way.
Good theories, Chris. Very good. I agree with a lot of them. The money is the main thing. And no, first off, let's go back to your first line. How is it a duck if Dmitry Bivol is going to fight Arthur Beterbiev? So you're telling me that this is Bivol is ducking, because I saw a lot of that online. I saw a lot of that from boxing fans, a lot of that from people that I respect. How are you ducking? Like a duck usually means that you don't want to fight at all. A duck means you're going to take on a lesser opponent in your next fight. So Dmitry Bivol is ducking Benavidez to fight
a monster.
Arthur Beterbiev?
A monster. The second fight wasn't easy, guys. The second fight was tough.
None of these fights, like Beterbiev can just knock out Bivol. Like that's, I don't think it's likely to happen in the third fight, but you're telling me that it can't happen? Like he's still powerful. It's still a 12 hard round. So I don't agree with that logic at all, because like that's not what a duck is. Like that word gets thrown around a lot, and now we're kind of watering down what that term even means if you're going to use it in this situation. But yes, this has to do with money. This was a money move, and you're absolutely right. Like like Bivol never dreamed of making this amount of money in these fights with Beterbiev. You have a financier in Turkey that was willing to put down a lot of money for the first two fights, and you're telling me that he's not going to be loyal to Turkey, who changed his life? I think anyone would do that. Beterbiev as well. And Eddie Hearn, promoter of Dmitry Bivol, put on Instagram, like, you always had our word. I don't know who that was towards. Was it towards Bivol? Was it towards Turkey? But yeah, like we think of Turkey just throwing down money and then the fighters just accepting it. But no, I think there was some hardball played here. And you're right. I think that Benavidez was inserted into the negotiations here, or at least was brought up into the fold to kind of get more money out of this, or to kind of make this a more money situation for Beterbiev and Bivol. But it kind of stinks for Benavidez, because now he's elevated to full champ, and we know his attitude in boxing, and he doesn't want to be elevated. I know how you feel about just elevating fighters. I don't understand why in the next fight couldn't have been an interim.
A very dangerous guy. You know, the win for the winter interim belt, which was the win Morell?
No,
Vazdik,
to get the interim?
Yeah, so the Vazdik was the interim, and then he defended the interim against David Morell. So listen, he beat two solid guys. I really don't like the guys who get elevated when they fight like a guy in the top eight, you know, and you're like, all right, well, come on, you didn't beat a champion, you didn't beat, you know, the number one contender. Like this is at least like, because you have one and two obviously is Bivol and Benavidez, but like really number three and number four to me is Benavidez and Morell.
Or Callum Smith in there as well.
Yeah, I think I would probably have Morell over Callum Smith, even though Callum Smith had a great win his last fight. He's got a couple bad losses in there. Those are the guys. And actually, that's you brought me to my great segue there. My next point is I would love to see Benavidez with Callum Smith. I think it makes perfect sense in the interim. And I'm sure David Benavidez is cool. Let's go. And Callum Smith will fight anybody too. So easy fights to make.
You would think, in theory, because Benavidez is going to defend that title and make his first defense of the full WBC title in the summer. You know, they're pretty steadfast, Samson Lukowicz, his manager, that we are staying on this side. And this side is this hemisphere in terms of fighting for on PBC, fighting in a pay-per-view,
Callum's
fighting.
Come over before?
Here's the thing, bro. And like Benavidez, I was at Benavidez Morell. I saw the arena, and I saw how many fans were in there. I don't know how many were comped, how many were bought, all that stuff. I just know that David Benavidez is a name here in the U.S. He's starting to sell tickets. Is he the top ticket seller? No. It's a pretty bleak situation over here in the U.S. when it comes to boxing ticket sellers. And David Benavidez is one of them. He's on that list. And that was the allure for Bivol, and I think that's the allure for Beterbiev. If Beterbiev beats Bivol, or whoever wins that third fight, is to come fight over here. And there is some allure over here. It still is a big market. And, you know, I don't know. There's a money being thrown around. There's a figure being thrown around of $8 million that was offered up to Bivol to fight Benavidez. I don't know if that's true or not. But there was something about, I don't think he was going to make more money, because I think Turkey would have just kept going higher and higher, because when he wants something, he goes and gets it. But there is an allure of fighting in the U.S. against Benavidez that I think Bivol would benefit from. Beterbiev would benefit from. He, even though Beterbiev has fought a bunch in the U.S., so has Bivol, but he did fight Canelo, but nothing really, you know, came of that afterwards.
Yeah, that was in Vegas. He fought Sullivan Barrera in New York. I think it was New York. Yeah, it was in New York. I was at the Garden. So, yeah, they've come over. And, yeah, you're right. I think the only thing missing from Bivol and Beterbiev is their marketability. But, you know, I think they've elevated themselves now because they've actually fought each other and they're about to make a trilogy for Legacy here. People
those
know
fights
who they
didn't
are
do
now,
any
much better.
Business, though. Those fights,
they
like...
didn't. They didn't, but boxing fans know who they are. So if you bring him over and you put him in with a ticket seller like Benavidez, either one of them, I think it's going to draw a lot of attention and more eyes. And then you will get people who are going to come out and get those tickets, because you have Benavidez fan base, which is already growing. And then you put him up against one of those beasts, and it's like, all right, you know, Benavidez will handle the marketing side, and then, you know, they will handle the making it a good fight side.
That's a good point. Yeah, in a perfect world, well, this is the world that we're in right now. It's not a perfect world, because in my perfect world, I want to see Benavidez fight Bivol.
Yeah.
I want to see Beterbiev and Bivol. I remember tweeting that right after the 12th round of the second fight, and got eviscerated. But everyone came around on that take because, you know, I'm not trashing the first two fights between Beterbiev and Bivol. I obviously will want to watch a third. I will be locked in for a third. I'll be excited about it. But, like, they were just so damn, like, every round kind of looked the same. Like, there were slight adjustments made by Bivol in the second fight. You know, what's the third fight? It's going to look just like that. It's going to be a razor-thin fight. I'm not saying, like, it won't be a good fight. But with Benavidez, it's something different.
Let me play devil's advocate. I agree with you, and we did a whole show on this. But let me play devil's advocate. Would we rather this, where we get the three fights back-to-back-to-back, or would we rather Triple G Canelo, where the first two fights are great, and then the third one happens way too late, and it's not a good fight?
Well, it's not going to happen because Beterbiev is 40.
Right. But
that's playing a role in all this.
I'm just saying theoretically.
Yeah.
Because we're going to complain no matter what, right? So we're complaining because they're fighting back-to-back-to-back, but then we also complain when they fight back-to-back and there's a gap.
Well, here's the thing, because, like, it's this new age of – it's the Turkey effect. Like, we have someone that's throwing down – exorbitant amount of money to make the fights right away. Like, we in recent times, boxing fans, we were programmed to think we're not going to get these fights, number one. Like, Beterbiev and Bivol didn't fight for like 5-6
years. But they
also
needed to marinate because of marketing.
Yeah, but also it wasn't...
In the old world, these fights wouldn't really have occurred. The first one would have been hard to make, and they wouldn't have made
as much
money.
The first one was hard to make.
Yeah, it was hard to make even with this new age that we have. But in the old world, like, they would fight... And yeah, it was a good fight, but the second one, would it sell right away? Would it make enough money? No, no. They probably would have both had to go fight other people and then come back. So yeah,
Top Rank did that. Top Rank would do that all the time. Like the Pacquiao-Marquez four fights lasted like 12 years. Like Bradley and Pacquiao didn't fight three times back-to-back-to-back. They gave them other fights to build up their profiles, to have them be the main event. But with Turkey now, he's just like, all right, this is what's next. Like, I'm giving you X amount of money. You know, maybe 10 or 12 million, which would be a lot more than this supposed offer out there. Did you see Mauricio Sulaiman's response to this?
I did not, actually, because I was wondering, because I made a point also about that. It's like, is this because Mauricio Sulaiman, WBC, who has never stripped Canelo, is going to strip Bivol right away and allow,
right away,
you know, Benavidez to get elevated? Is that a shot at Turkey?
Never. Mauricio Sulaiman never... stripped Canelo, never mandated Canelo to fight Benavidez. Famously did not sanction a Bivol Beterbiev fight because of Russian ties, which was one of the most ridiculous things in sports. Do you remember that? When Mauricio Sulaiman wouldn't allow Bivol to fight for the WBC title because he was of Russian descent during the Russian-Ukraine conflict. Like, what are you doing, Mauricio Sulaiman? Like, you really think you're that important that you're going to, like, use politics? First of all, that was ridiculous. So a lot of people are upset because Sulaiman puts out a tweet. I have just received a cold and impersonal notification from Dmitry Bivol's lawyer, Patrick English, with arguments that are so ridiculous that I'd rather not discuss, informing that the WBC that Dmitry Bivol has decided to relinquish his belt. Meanwhile, Dan Rafael posted the letter from Pat English. It wasn't cold or impersonal. So Mauricio Sulaiman is all up in his feelings. It was literally an email saying, like, you know, the IBF should have been the next mandatory number one. Number two, unfortunately, we're going to have to give up this title because we have a third fight with Beterbiev that was somewhat agreed to. Hopefully, we can work together again in the future. Basically, like, this is a money thing, and you should understand that, Mauricio, because you love money. You love getting your 3%. You love getting your sanction fees.
It's a legal letter, dude. What are we doing here? Do you want like X's and O's at the end of it and hearts? What are we talking about?
Unbelievable from Suleiman. Like, thinking, first of all, anyone cares. Like, we're going to be on your side in this. Oh, my God. Cold and impersonal. And then also, like, you're not getting your 3% licensing.
These governing bodies are insane. Like, it's ridiculous what they expect from fighters.
It gets even more insane. He does an interview in Fight Hub, caught up with Suleiman. And Suleiman says, oh, I heard that David Benavidez offered Bivol $8 million. So I'm like, what? When have you ever heard the president of an organization throwing out money offers to try to? He said that to try to make Bivol look bad, which I thought was insanity. Like, would you, if you were
your former champion of your organization, you're trying to make him look bad?
Would you like it if this guy is not a promoter, Suleiman? He's not a manager. He's not in these negotiations, and he is going around throwing out these offers. Like, would you like that if you were a fighter, if you had Mauricio Suleiman? That's insane.
I'd sue him, but I was pretty litigious during my career, so.
A lot of fighters are. I mean, these guys are not afraid to hire Pat English.
If you have money, most fighters don't have money, especially when you're coming up, so you don't hear guys suing, but I was willing to spend my fight money to sue, so.
I just couldn't believe that from Suleiman. I've never heard someone in his position, throwing around money, and you can just read right through it. It's like, are you trying to make Bivol look bad? Like, the $8 million. Say the $8 million is true. So obviously Turkey gave him 10 or 12, and like $8 million. That's a big offer, and that offer will still be there if Benavidez really wants it, and Benavidez does want it because he's right there. He's right in the precipice. He's almost a little bit desperate in all this because everything that happened with Canelo, and now he's moved up to 175. Bivol's in the driver's seat, and so is Beterbiev. And long story short, like, fans, like, everyone wanted to see Bivol Benavidez next. Not everyone, but I would say the majority of fans. But it doesn't mean we're not going to get it. Like, I agree with Garcia there. He's thinking like a trainer. He's thinking like 3-4 fights, not thinking like a fan, but, we'll get it. We'll get that fight. Hopefully we get that fight. In a perfect world, we get Benavidez versus Callum Smith sometime in July. Can Callum Smith come over here to the States? And is that a big enough main event? I think so. And then Bivol better be a fight in October. And then the winners face off again. It will be an undisputed fight once again. So I guess be patient. And another thing too, one last thing. It's like, a couple years ago, we were getting crap fights. Like, Bivol would have vacated, and then he would have fought someone that we've never heard of. He would have been buried down on a card. Benavidez would have been, like, fighting someone we've never heard. Now, Benavidez is potentially fighting Callum Smith, and then we're getting a third Bivol better be a fight. I think fans are a little, not understanding how good we have it compared to 3-4 years ago.
I really like David Benavidez. I don't care who he fights. I think he makes every fight fun. He goes 12 rounds and it's fun. It's not like, I want to get the knockout. Like, I mean, his 12 round wins his last two of them were good. They're fun fights. The Merrell fight I thought was excellent. So if he fights Callum Smith, Callum Smith's a dangerous puncher. I mean, I'm with you, Dan. Like, we still have good fights. This weight class is deep. There's a lot of talent. So, I'm not mad about what's going on at all. I think we do get all these fights just because of the personalities of these individuals, that they're going to make the best fights possible, and they want to make the most money. Like, this is really like a fight fans weight class, because these guys are willing to put it all on the line and fight. And other than Benavidez, all these guys have losses.
Be interesting if our guy Beterbiev turns back to Hands of Time and beats Bivol, and then what?
I always use that Fight Club reference on a long enough timeline, everyone's survival rate goes down to zero. The more time you spend with Archer Beterbiev, the better the chances that he knocks you out. So, I mean, he's already gone 24 rounds with him, has Bivol. Is 36. Can he do it? Can he get through 36 without getting touched with those hammers? We'll see.
I'm not ready to get into to break down the third fight, but I do wonder if Beterbiev just throws caution to the wind and just starts throwing wild shots. Try to knock
him out.
He
might get clipped too. That would be a pretty cool thing to do. Because listen, at this point, you're probably not going to outbox the guy. You know, I thought he outboxed him twice. But the last one, I thought he did it pretty not handily, but he did it.
Bivol, you're saying?
Yes. Yeah, he's already outboxed you twice. If I'm better, BF. Just go out swinging, bro.
And that can turn into the the old, like, you know, this has happened in the past. Like, I think of Wilder and Fury, where none of us wanted to see that third fight. Ended up being the best of the trilogy. Yep. Ended up being like a top heavyweight fight ever. Who knows? So if that happens in this third fight, both guys touch the canvas and it's an all out slugfest. You know, that could happen. If Beterbiev wins, like, all right, Beterbiev Benavidez. It'd be 41, and it'd be probably Beterbiev's last fight. But imagine going out, Beterbiev fighting Benavidez. Like, holy, that would be nuts. So I think, all things considered, you know, we just have to be a little patient. Like, it is the top four guys. So it's the top three guys. Bivol, Benavidez, and Beterbiev. A lot of Bs. And they're all
the Bs.
All swimming in the same little pool, hopefully, when we get that fight. But it's going to take we have to deal with this stuff in between, which will never go away. Doesn't matter if Turkey's involved. We're always going to get this. We're always going to get vacant.
There's always the in-between.
Right. Like a casual fan that just got into boxing, it's like, what does this all mean? Like vacating and why is Maurice...
Elevation and interim? Right. What does interim mean? Yeah.
Right. It's nuts.
But that's why you tune in here, so you can hear us describe and explain what the hell this stuff is.
All right. Moving on to a big fight in the welterweight division. Let's talk about what we love, and that's actual big fights. And we're going to see a big one between Jaron Boots Ennis, Amantis Stanionis, IBF, WBA, Ring Magazine on the line. It's the first welterweight unification bout since July of 2023. When Crawford and Spence got into the ring for Undisputed. Before we get into it, we got to figure out how we got here. How do we get to this fight? You got to go all the way back to Crawford and Spence in July 2023. Undisputed titles were on the line. In that one, Crawford wins. He sits out a year. He says, maybe I'll fight Boots. Maybe I'll fight Stanionis. Maybe I'll fight Virgil Ortiz. No. He sits out a year. He goes up to 154. Eventually, the belts get dispersed. The IBF gets stripped first. And Ennis gets elevated to IBF champion. Ennis has the fights with Karen. He fights David Avanesian. He wins all of those. Stanionis, in the meantime, elevated to full WBA champ. But that's not after three cancellations with Virgil Ortiz, which puts Stanionis on the shelf. Barrios and Norman are the other title holders at 147. But that's the timeline on how we got to finally getting a unification bout in what was once the glamour division of the world of boxing. It's Ennis and Stanionis. I'm excited for this one.
Both of these guys had a tortured route to get here, but we're finally here, and it's a good fight. And it's not only a good fight, it's an important fight in terms of, you know, you just mentioned, you know, it's a unification fight, first one in a while. But irregardless of the titles, like, this would be a good fight. It's a great style matchup. It's two guys that are, I think, are the tip top of sport. We have the legitimate number one and number two fighting each other in the glory division that is welterweight. And yes, this weight class isn't great, but guess what? These two guys are really, really damn good. So this is a really fun fight. Very, very excited this weekend. I've been doing some studying this week, little tape review, getting ready for this weekend, watching these two guys and their styles and how they match up, and getting ready for today's show. But there's this is an interesting fight, especially as you look deeper into it.
Yeah, you say one versus two. That's what the Ring Magazine is all about, and hopefully they stay with that as it becomes a little more political. The Ring Magazine, hopefully it remains one versus two is always going to be for the Ring belt. And you know, Ennis just in an interview I saw where he said the Ring belt is the one I always wanted. I think a lot of fighters and fans agree there. But yeah, I mean, the road for this for Ennis has been crazy. I mean, it's both guys. I mean, Stanionis was on such a great track when he beat Butiev. I mean, that was considered like a 50-50 fight in 2021. I want to say that fight was, it was 2022, April of 2022. And he goes 2 years without a fight. He fought Gabriel Mastre last May. And now we're looking at 11 months.
By no fault of his own, he didn't fight. But
no, because he was just like, all right, I'll fight Virgil Ortiz. And you got to give Stanionis credits. Like, this guy will fight anyone. I'll fight Virgil Ortiz. And Virgil is, you know, going through that crazy issues that he had with the blood, like the blood disease and going in and out of hospitals and fights on, fights off, fights on, fights. And you can't blame Stanionis because, I mean, he was willing to get in there with Virgil at 147.
The very best. And he's in with the very best once again. The kid's badass. He wants to fight everybody. I love it.
Yeah, I'm just happy for him that he's going to get this this shot and get some shine. And win or lose, I still want to see him get in the mix, because he's pretty young and he has a lot of time to make up. But the last five, Boots is coming off of the second Karen fight, which left a lot of question marks. David Avanesian, he KO5. That was a KO5. Roman Villa was a KO10. The first Karen fight, and then the Castillo-Clayton KO2 is Boots Ennis' last five fights. As for Stanionis, he is coming off of unanimous decision win over Gabriel Maestre, and that was in May. He beat Butiev, which we just talked about, which was in April of 2022, which was a UD. He has a no contest against Collazo. He decisioned Thomas Delorme back in 2020, and he has a KO9 over Janner Gonzalez. A lot of decisions from Stanionis, and that would be a key talking point in this preview. Not a big puncher, but as more of a technician, Boots. Let's start with Boots. A lot of questions about Boots, especially after that last fight where he admitted to having issues making the weight and just did not look great. We tagged a bunch. I got some numbers to back that up. I think there's a lot of questions around Boots Ennis. When I talk about his last five fights, Chris, remember when he was just blowing through everyone? Yeah. At welterweight, and then we're like, this guy is the heir apparent to Crawford, Spence. He's like all of them mixed into one. But I feel like the shine has come off, and I want to see if it can come back for Boots.
Yeah, he was on a tear. I mean, he was destroying Chris Van Heerden, and it became a no decision because of a headbutt, and Van Heerden suffered a cut. But like, that was going to be a one round demolition. Mm-hmm. Sergey Lipinets, who's always super tough and was really good, even at 47, he was obviously a 40-pounder, but like was good at 47. He only had one loss at the time, and Boots knocked him out viciously. Thomas Delorme, he blew out in one round, which boxing math never works, but he fought Delorme right after. Stanionis went 12 with him and was actually in a fight. And Delorme was always solid. Wasn't really a welterweight either. But I mean, getting blown out in one round, I mean, with a single shot KO was very impressive. Clayton, really not much to speak about him. Blows him out early, and then he meets Karen Chigadzian, and that was the first time we saw like him look not ordinary, but like human. It's like, oh, he goes 12 rounds. Yeah. One every second, one every round. Wasn't very exciting. Whatever. Dominated, wins a fight. Roman Villa, tough guy. Gets him out of there late. Avanesian didn't look great. Left a lot to be desired in that fight. And then the rematch with Chigadzian, we all know how that one went. So, yeah, it's like the questions started to kind of come in with that first Chigadzian fight. Then Villa, then Avanesian, then the second Karen fight. You're like, is this guy that guy? Is he, you know, like, if I feel like Teofimo when he was in that fight afterwards, and he goes, I still got it? Do I still got it? Does Jaren Ennis still got it? And that's the question. That's a hard question to ask for someone that we all touted as being like the next Terrence Crawford, the guy that maybe could beat Terrence Crawford. People were throwing that around. So yeah, you're right. A lot of questions about Ennis.
There's a lot of questions for a lot of different reasons. Like the Karen fight, I mean, that guy's a nightmare stylistically. Yes. He's just in your face, not in your face, in your face, in and out, unbelievable.
Rough,
gas tank.
Physical, strong.
Yeah, that's just, and he had to fight him twice. That kind of like, I wouldn't say, it kind of showed us a little bit more about, we're not exposed because Boots won the fights, and let's be real here, but it did open us up to a lot of questions.
People underestimate Karen Chigadzian. He would be a nightmare for literally anyone.
Because he's not a name, and he's came out of nowhere, and we wanted Boots. Boots was coming off of all these knockouts, and we wanted to see him with the top guys, and it was a lot of those organization BS. That's the reason why Karen got both of these shots. Like Karen getting that second fight, the IBF. I mean, needs to explain that. They need to explain.
Dude,
another thing:
three absolute nobodies that no one has ever heard of in the world stage, and then gets back to fighting Ennis again.
And Ennis was playing that game. Like that's what was Ennis's thing. That's how he got the IBF title in the first place, is because he was the next up. And you know, for a time he didn't have Matchroom behind him. He did have PBC behind him, but kind of like his career has been very strange, Boots Ennis. For the talent that he has, like, he should have been moved way different, but that's all in the past. It's, you know, signing with Matchroom was supposed to get him to this type of fight, and he's in this type of fight. But, you know, you can't not think about the past with Ennis. And we brought up the IBF. The IBF is going to have their rehydration clause in this fight, right? Because was reading the comments on our last episode. You know, Zhu was complaining about the IBF rehydration clause of no more than 10 pounds for the Bakram fight. And he said that the minute I got hit with the first shot from Bakram, I knew I was done, said Tim Zhu.
Yep.
And Boots, after the fight, in his last fight with Karen, was one of the more transparent and just truthful post-fight interviews. You can almost fault him for it because he was like, yeah, I don't know what the heck happened in this fight. I can't make the weight anymore. I mean, is he going to be more motivated because this is a bigger fight? But, you know, motivation versus just straight up like how your body is aging, like it's hard for him. So I think at this age, 147 is definitely tough for him. Throw in the IBF rehydration clause. Like, these are all, it all goes into the sauce for Boots Ennis. And it's something that I'm really, really thinking about in this fight.
Let me go off on the IBF rehydration clause because it's stupid and dangerous. There is no other organization has this. It is an absolute number of plus 10, no matter, regardless of the weight class. How does that make any sense? Why is it not a percentage? It should be 10% of the weight class. So 147, you'll be able to get 14.7 pounds. Okay, that's fine. Let's do that. 130 pounds, you get 13 pounds. 125 pounds, you get 12 pounds. 175 pounds, you get 17 pounds. Because listen, 10 pounds across the board. So a light heavyweight at 175 gets the same amount of weight to gain by the next day as a 118 pounder or a 125. How does that work? It's a different percentage, a different body weight. We're different size people. So 10 pounds for a 47 pounder, that is not a lot. Guys gain a lot more than that, especially these new age welterweights. These guys walk around. Some of these guys walk around, it's honestly 175, 180 pounds. So, wow. Which is why I was never a welterweight. I'm in the gym with these guys. I have my sparring partners with these guys. I hated fight at 147. I just did it for the money because the guys are just way too big. So plus 10 pounds for a guy like Boots. You've met Boots, right? You've been around Boots?
Yeah.
He's a big dude. He looks me in the eye. I'm tall. I'm tall even for welterweight. Looks me in the eye. He's got wide shoulders, and he's thick from neck to his feet. I shake hands with him. He's got different size hands than me. He's a different size human than I am. He's a big dude. He's one of the biggest welterweights I've ever seen. So plus 10 pounds for him, that's a struggle. That is a struggle for him, plus 10 pounds by the next morning. And it could have a big effect on this fight. Stanionis is not a huge welterweight. He's a good size
welterweight. Oh, he's tiny. He's small. We'll get to that.
He's like a... You know, he's a normal size welterweight. He's come in at 44 before. Like, he's not like, not a big guy at all. Heavily muscled, sure. Definitely is going to come in phenomenal shape as always. But yeah, the weight can really play a factor in this fight, especially because of their matchup.
Well, the plus 10, how about just getting to 147?
Well, that too. I mean, that's hard enough. And then basically, dude, 10 pounds goes back on real quick. When you're cutting weight hard, plus 10 pounds is tough.
When I fought
a welterweight, I never had to do a rehydration, but plus 10 would have been fine for me because I wasn't a welterweight. But at 140, if I had to do plus 10, that would have been a nightmare for me.
Guys, just go back and look at Ryan Garcia, Tank Davis. Look at Ryan Garcia. First of all, look at Ryan Garcia boiling down to 140. Looks like a different human being. Look at Ryan Garcia walking into the ring for the Tank fight. He looked like a skeleton.
Different
that
guy.
It's wild. It's wild. That is a crazy clause by the IBF. I understand their explanation would be some type of fire safety nonsense. But it is
it's
something
more dangerous. That I'm looking, you're not allowing guys to rehydrate their brains. It's way more dangerous.
It's so freaking stupid. But it is something that I'm looking for in this fight. I want to see how Boots looks today's Wednesday as recorded. It's Thursday, Friday. Thursday at the presser, Friday at the weigh-in, of course. We'll see when he gets on the scale. We'll see if there's any issues. That's a big part of this fight. Secondly, inside of the ring, I want to see pace for Boots. 60 punches is his average. That's a pretty good number. You know, it sets the floor for Boots Ennis in terms of output. You know, he throws 60, 70, get up to 80 in some rounds. And that's what I want to see if he can do in this fight. He's the bigger man. He's got the longer reach. I want to see how active he is inside of that ring. Because in the second Karen fight, his pace went down, and I think that's because Karen took that away from him, and I think that Stanionis is going to try to do that as well, because Stanionis has a really good jab. I'll get to that in a second, but I want to see Boots step the pace up, and it kind of goes hand-in-hand with the weight, kind of goes hand-in-hand with how he feels on fight night, but I think if Boots can get around 60, you know, that could be the floor in terms of output, then I think that Boots should be in good shape for this fight.
Yeah, pace has a lot to do with this fight, I think, on both ends with these guys. And, you know, Ennis, he's got that great counterpunching ability, but he likes to, he runs numbers once he finds his rhythm and once he gets you to stand still. The thing about Stanionis is he's a high guard fighter. So there's going to be a lot of opportunity for Boots to keep hands on him. And if his gas tank and his engine are good and he's made the weight right, there's going to be, Boots is one of those guys where he'll keep hitting you to make sure your hands stay at home. Because Stanionis, with that high guard, every time he opens up, there's going to be an opportunity for him to get hit. Every time he opens up offensively, there's going to be options for him to get hit. When you got a guy like Boots who can pull the trigger as quickly as he can, those kind of guys usually get handcuffed when you got a fast guy who can throw numbers. And if Boots comes in shape and has a gas tank ready, it's going to be a long night for Stanionis to try and get off.
Yeah, in the second Karen fight, Ennis got hit. And he got hit a lot. And Karen was able to land 37% of his power shots. That's a really good clip. And he outlanded Boots over the final two rounds. Karen outlanded Ennis in rounds, I think it was 11
and 12. He landed some clean, hard shots in those two rounds.
Right. I can't get that out of my mind, too. Like, I don't know what that was about. I don't know if the focus was there. Like, it's a lot of things with Boots. And it's fine to question them because 3 years ago, you make this fight, I think Boots, everyone's talking about a destruction. But after what we've seen from Ennis, you know, getting tagged a bit. But how do you look at that? Like, getting tagged is one thing, you know, over consistently, not great, I don't think. But also, like, Ennis is willing to stand and trade. That's his whole thing. He's like, I'll stand in the pocket.
It's a Philly fighter. Yeah.
Right, it's just like a power puncher and a knockout guy. It's just like it's like in baseball. If you're a strikeout pitcher, you're going to throw a lot of pitches. Like, your pitch count is going to be way up there. In boxing, if you're a knockout fighter, you're going to get hit because you're willing to stand and trade. So how do you look at that with Boots? Is it bad defense, or is it kind of like a stylistic thing for Boots where I'll get into the fire here?
No, I mean, like, I didn't understand that a strikeout pitcher, you throw a lot of pitches. Don't you throw less pitches? I think you think a knockout.
No.
I always say like a home run hitter strikes out a lot. So guys who are really going for the knockout get hit more, you know. So
in baseball, if you're a strikeout pitcher, you're getting into deep counts. You're throwing a lot of pitches.
I understand. Okay. Okay.
So therefore, your pitch count's getting up there.
Got you. Not a baseball guy. But so, yeah, Boots,
that's,
I think,
deep.
He's so offensive-minded, and he's going for it. And listen, when you're going for it, you get clipped. I mean, it happens. I mean, when you're a knockout puncher, you take the risk to get hit more. And Jerron Ennis is that guy, and he's willing to take a shot if he's going to land three or four, because he's not a one-for-one guy. He's not like right in the pocket, Mexican style. He is a great counterpuncher. But those guys, you know, they get caught too. So, but he's going to go for it. And Stanionis is going to have opportunities because Stanionis punches with you. He's a dangerous guy. Not a huge puncher, but he's a damaging guy, and he's a strong guy. He's physical, very, very physical, very physically strong. He will punch with you. There's going to be opportunities for Stanionis to crack the faster, speedier Ennis as they're trading. Because, listen, Ennis is there to get hit, man. He puts his nose on the line. He puts his chin on the line to hurt you.
You talk about the high guard of Stanionis, so there should be some opportunities for Ennis to land some body shots. 34% of Ennis's landed punches are body shots. He lands seven
stab jab. He stab jabs a lot.
He lands seven body shots per round. That's all courtesy of CompuBox with the CompuBox notes. Thank you for that. So there's opportunities for Ennis to go to the body, but with Ennis, yeah, you're right. He's an accumulation guy. When he gets going, he gets that rhythm. You know, he starts at 60 punches a round. And when he gets going and when he feels like his guy doesn't throw it back, or he feels like numbers. He can do that, he runs numbers. But it's all going to come down to Stanionis and his jab. You know, I was texting with you. It's like, yeah, what's Stanionis's MO? Like, what's his calling card? His calling card is a really, really good jab. Stanionis lands 10 jabs per round. That's an astronomical number. And he lands it at a 36% clip. This is over Stanionis's last eight fights. Bam Rodriguez, for some context, lands 28%. Of his jabs. And the only reason that Stanionis isn't leading all of boxing is because of his inactivity, and he just doesn't have enough fights to be on this list. He will be on this list if he keeps that up. But for Stanionis, it's going to be jab, 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 get Boots out of his rhythm. I don't know if he's going to be able to land 10 jabs per round, But just sticking that in the face of Boots is going to be what I think will be weapon number one of Stanios' game plan to win this fight.
I'm gonna push back, Dan, because I don't think he has a good jab. I think obviously by the numbers, like if you look at the numbers, yes, you land 10 jabs around, landing the percentage he lands is great. He has a mid-range full step jab. He's there to get countered like crazy, and he will. And he gets hit because he falls in. He'll step in hard. He throws like a mid-range jab. He'll hit you in the chest. He makes contact, but he's there for a good counterpuncher. He's there for a guy to time you. He's not the fastest guy in the world. So if you see him coming and you can anticipate that kind of shot, you're going to get hit. And he does get hit. And also, he falls forward because his momentum, his off his back foot, he pushes in. His footwork is pretty slow and lumbering, so he'll stab, jab, and step in. I was literally just watching him this morning. And he'll fall into shots when good counterpunchers and guys who can have a little bit of TikTok in and out would give him a lot of trouble, but also guys who would just have can pull that trigger and fire. But he's very durable. So when you ask like what his MO is, I was thinking about it. I'm like, he's a workman. He is solid across every area. Everything he does is pretty damn good. Everything is solid. He's durable. He's not slow. He's pretty strong, but he's not a killer puncher. He's physical. He's got a great gas tank. He's got a good chin. He's got a pretty good jab. He's got a pretty good right hand. He's pretty good at everything. He's good at everything, but he's not great at anything. But those guys are a nightmare because if they're lacking somewhere, they make up for it elsewhere. And you know, being steady and solid at everything, it makes you a really rounded, well-rounded fighter. And that's what I see with Stanionis.
Yeah, we'll see. He gets that jab out there, but that's the beauty of it. Like, I'll tell you the jabs, but you know, you have to see it with your eyes too. Yeah. And you have to figure it all out. But I do think he will throw that jab out there. That's just what he does. And I think
he should jab the chest. He's got a southpaw in front of him. Just stab that jab and make sure your head's offline and just don't be there for those counters and be a little elusive on the way in. A couple feints here and there, creating angles because it is a southpaw. So you got to be a little more careful.
I think Stanionis will also look to slow the pace a little bit, similar to how Karen did in the first fight. Anis threw only 49 punches around in the first fight. And I just told you what his normal output is and what he can get it up to. That's going to be something that Stanionis is going to look to do. Get the fight at his pace, slow it down, and be technical in there and be a workman, like you said, and win close rounds, because I don't think there's going to be a stoppage.
Bring that lunch pail, baby. Bring that lunch pail. Get in his chest and go to work.
I don't think there's going to be a stoppage on Stanionis' side. His path to victory is a hard-fought decision. His path to victory is jabs. His path to victory is slow down the pace. Get Ennis, get into his fight for Stanionis. Easier said than done. Also, too, like we talked about Stanionis, smaller welterweight. He's giving up 6 inches in reach in this fight and 2 inches in height. It is a ninth consecutive fight where he's at a disadvantage in both categories. That is a courtesy of Lee Groves. Great stat right there. So, I mean, Stanionis is he's a smaller welterweight. He's given up a lot. He's given up power. He's given up reach. He's given up height. You know, he's going to have to be crafty in there. He's going to have to figure out, like, when you think of Stanionis, at least I did, you know, he looks imposing, like he looks strong. He's bigger, big and strong, but I'm not saying he's not, but he's not going to be the bigger man in there. And he has not been the bigger man in the ring in 8 consecutive fights.
Jerron Ennis has a 74 inch reach at 5'10". That's crazy. 74 inches. That's a really long reach for a welterweight.
That's why I wanted to see him. And wow. That's why I wanted to see him and Crawford.
Yo, Crawford's another one. I think he has 74 as well.
They're like a mirror image of each other in terms of like skills.
And they're just physically made for boxing. You know, short torso, long arms. Like that's what you want to be. Floyd Mayweather had a really exceptional plus on his reach as well, because Floyd's only like 5'7". But he had like a 42-inch reach, something crazy like that. So Jerron Ennis, like I said, I'm reiterating, gigantic welterweight, biggest welterweight I've ever seen. Other than
bigger than Spence, Rio.
I think so. I think he's thicker because even in the ring, like Spence's arms aren't that long. I don't think he's a 74. But just like, I don't know. He Jerron looks like he fills in differently.
His Spence shoulders
lean and very, very, very tight. You know, Jerron looks like
he fills his back. In. When I look at Ennis's back in the ring, I'm like, damn, that's like, well, that's a middleweight heavily frame.
Heavily muscled, yeah.
So I could see Ennis going up to 154 after this fight. If Ennis wins, I mean, what more does he have to do?
I want him to see him take the whole division.
That's a lot of, I mean, okay.
Not necessarily, because what if Barrios and Norman fight?
What if Barrios fights Manny Pacquiao? What? No, never mind. What if Barrios fights Norman? I didn't say that. What if Barrios fights Norman?
Right, and then we have unified. You have unified on one end, and then we're gonna have unified after this.
So you know, we are leaving it in the hands of saying that Aram and Al are gonna work together and give us this Norman Barrios fight.
I do, because they've been saying that they're staying on this side of the world. They both said that. I believe that negotiations
this hemisphere
at least talks have started. So I think it's a very real option that we could see Bob and Al coming together to make those fights and unify. And then it makes sense to just get a full unification.
I feel like this is a Monday conversation if Boots wins that we're having right now. But
well, regardless, whoever wins, if it's Stanionis or it's Boots, I mean
Stanionis, then I see a welterweight. I see more of a path to an undisputed because Stanionis doesn't have these other fights lined up. Boots did turn down 154. He turned down a fight with Virgil, turned down some big fights over in Saudi. Those are lingering. Those are out there. And we talked about how stalled his career has been, and he missed out on some big money, Boots. I don't want to get too far ahead, but if he has his hand raised on Saturday night and he doesn't think it's worth sticking around 147, the weight, the politics, he might go to 154. He could also say, hey, at least I became unified. At least I fought the number two guy. And in today's game, that's kind of hard to do. And he'll do that. Let's get over to the DraftKings betting preview. Won our last one last weekend when we picked Richard Torres by decision. What I'm looking for right here, what's really sticking out to me, is Boots Ennis by decision at plus 110. That is an interesting number that I think will rapidly go down as the week goes on, as more people throw money on Ennis by decision. Jaron Ennis is the favorite.
Plus money on that. So Vegas is thinking favorite by stoppage.
Yeah. Well, no, Ennis by KO is plus 130.
Oh. So what are they thinking here?
They're thinking Ennis maybe I guess they're thinking Ennis money line. Ennis to win is minus 600. He's a heavy favorite. Stanionis is the underdog at plus 425. He is a live dog. If he can
live dog, very live.
Over unders 10.5. Never really touched the over unders. If you think that Ennis, I'm seeing a lot of people tell me that Ennis is going to stop Stanionis. I don't see that. Like what do you see that will tell you that? Because rounds 7 through 12 is plus 250 for an Ennis stoppage. Ennis by stoppage is plus 130. Like, what do you see in Stanionis? The guy barely has fought in the last 3 years. Never been knocked out.
They see what I saw this morning watching tape study. As Stanionis steps in hard with the jab, his forward momentum shifts him into square positions. He bends over a lot. You look at a guy like Ennis who can pull and counter and come and rip uppercuts. If he can time that right shot and time those rushes and catch a Stanionis off guard, off balance, and if he can't take the shot, if he gets hurt early, I could see where the stoppage comes. Technically,
yeah, I know those are tough ones to bet because it's like I haven't seen Stanionis really hurt before,
right?
And you know, I don't see him vulnerable. Like, he doesn't have a faulty chin for all we know. But if you do think Ennis is just, this is going to be his signature win, and you think that, you know, he's just, this is it, he's destined to get the stoppage.
A lot of people online are reaching out and saying that to me because I was like, oh, this is a good fight. And like, no, it's not. Ennis is going to crush him. I'm like, all right, we'll see.
Based off of what, though? Like, what did you, like, Ennis has not looked good, and Stanionis has barely fought.
Yeah.
And when he does fight, he wins. And he wins.
A lot of people bet with their hearts, dude. They bet with their favorite fighter. I like this guy. I like Ennis. I want him to win. Yeah, I stop myself from betting all the time where I'm like, it's a fighter that I like, and I'm just like, nope, don't bet that. You're betting with your heart. It's stupid.
Ennis' decision is probably the safest bet, plus 110, and you should hop on it now. By the time we put this episode out, I think it will be probably plus, you know, maybe even down lower than that. But if you think that Ennis is going to get the stoppage, I think it does come late. I think the Stanios is too sturdy early. Ennis will get that engine going. And then if you like 7 through 12, that's plus 250. So if you take a little more of a risk, but it's going to pay off. That's pretty much gambling 101 there. And it's stoppage 7 through 12 plus 250. That's your DraftKings betting preview. Stanionis by decision, plus 700.
Whoa.
If Stanionis is going to win, it's going to be by decision.
I would think so, yeah.
Like Stanionis money line doesn't make much sense. That's plus 425.
Yeah.
There it is, everybody. DraftKings betting preview. Bet with your head, not over it. Don't bet with your heart. Listen to us, because we will win you some money.
Bet with your head, not over it. Don't bet with your heart. Good sayings.
Thank you. Let's get to Chris's categories here. Power, speed, ring IQ, defense. Chris's categories for Boots Ennis versus Amantas Stanionis.
Power, Boots. One punch power, absolutely, you can tell. I mean, listen, again, boxing math doesn't work, but if you look at the Delorme fight, Delorme get blown out by one round by Boots and then went 12 with Stanionis. But even talking about that, you can just tell he's a harder puncher. Speed, Boots. Hand speed, foot speed, everything. Reaction times, everything. He's a quicker fighter. We said Stanionis is not the fastest guy in the world. Ring IQ, Boots once again, Philly style. Oh, the guy, okay. Yeah, no, absolutely. The guy. I mentioned the technical flaws that Stanionis, and listen, Boots makes some flaws, has some technical mistakes as well, especially the way he comes in at certain times when he's coming after guys. But he's such a good counterpuncher. He's able to fire off that back foot. I'm going with Boots on that one. And then defense. I know we've seen Boots get hit a lot lately. I know we talked about him taking chances. But if you got high guard versus Philly Shell, I'm going Philly Shell all day. So I got Boots across the board. Does not mean this is a blowout. Still think this is a really good fight, and Stanionis could win this fight. But if you just – how else would you have this? Power, speed, ring IQ, defense. Boots, you know, is just beats him on every one of those. I talked about how Stanionis is stable, steady, pretty good at everything, not great at anything. So he falls under the radar when you do head-to-head matchups like this, especially with a guy like Boots, but doesn't mean that he's not in the fight. No knock on Stanionis either, by the way.
I can't wait to make the social media graphic where we do the checks and it's going to be all Boots and everyone's
all Boots.
Outraged. What is Chris Algieri talking about? Because your list, 154 list, you're not on Twitter. I put it on Twitter. And I'm you're not on Twitter, so there's some people that disagree with your list, and I'm just sitting here taking bullets for you, bro. I'm taking shrapnel, defending your list. It's not even my list.
don't defend my list.
It's a great list because you got people talking like they don't agree with you. Fundora at five.
Good.
Some guys like these two simps. Call us simps. This guy, these two simps got Fundora at five. Meanwhile, he's got the belts. And I was like, should I respond? I was at the gym. I got some testosterone flowing through me.
I'm confused. Who are we simping for?
I usually don't reply unless you're following me, because that means you're not on board. It means you're not a boxing fan if you're not following the podcast or following me. And I said, I'll reply. I was like, only a true simp puts all the stock into belts. Take that, bro. Another guy says, respectfully, you shouldn't have a boxing show because we didn't have Charlo on the list.
Charlo hasn't fought in the weight class in how many years?
Right. Everyone came to my defense. I love that when others chime in and be like, bro, what are you talking about? Charlo hasn't fought in three. I would love to have Charlo on that list. But like, I love that line. Respectfully, you shouldn't have a show. Like you're Dan, you don't deserve a career, but I mean it respectfully.
I love that.
Like give up
respectfully, you're a fucking idiot.
Respectfully, give up your livelihood. Just respectfully though. And I wrote back like, yo, Charlo hasn't fought in 3 years, but I'm going to keep my show. And he didn't understand the joke because he's like, no, I'm not saying you can't keep your show. This guy just didn't get it. Another guy wasn't following.
No.
But long story short, Chris, your
Nothing
list.
Personal, bro. I don't like you.
Personal, give up your whole career. I agree with you.
Oscar De La Hoya liked my list, though.
Of course, because you had Virgil number one.
Well, I mean, come on.
Perfect. It makes you think. That's a very, very, very interesting weight class,
dude,
154.
That weight class is so – we're splitting hairs. Like, and it's no knock on Fundora. It's just these guys are all so good, and they can knock each other off at any time. Listen, I had Madrimov at the top of the list until Virgil beat him.
Oh, the Aussies hate you as well.
Because I didn't have to?
Right. But they also loved us because they loved the segment that... Hilarious. The last episode we did was very zoo-centric. You know, we gave him his props.
We love
it. So YouTube comment section was like, yeah, finally, the Aussies got... It got into the Australian algorithm. The episode did well, and it had a lot of Australians saying, you guys get it. You guys understand what zoo is all about. Then there's the Twitter fans that are Aussies that are like, how the hell do you not have zoo on top five?
Because he beat Joey Spencer in his last fight.
And he lost to Bakram, and he beat Fundora. He lost to Fundora. I know. I'm not getting into this. But
I had Fundora at five, so where am I going to have zoo?
Top 10.
I got him in top 10, but we didn't do top 10. We did top
5. Right, exactly. We did top 5 to make it a little more engaging. Long story short, this is the same thing with your categories here. It's like it has to be explained. Like, you're going to see boots across the board. It doesn't mean I think it's going
to
be
the show.
Right.
When we put out clips and people will respond on my Instagram, I'm like, go watch the show.
That's the whole point of clips.
Go watch the show.
That's a dirty media trick, Chris.
I know, but it's just like these people. It's like, oh, go watch the show, man. Go watch the show.
You're now.
I've had media members reach out to me, and I've been like, go listen to the whole show. We'll post something, and like respected media members will reach out and be like, oh, well, yeah. I'm like, all right, dude, go watch the show, dude. You know what clips are for? Clips are to get people to watch the show. Go watch the show.
Using this respected, is a long form. Using the term respected very liberally. Oh my god, another word I can't say. Liberally.
Liberally.
I think it's the RLY that just puts my brain into a pretzel.
I think it's just the English language, Dan. I think.
Yeah. I haven't finished my coffee yet. Longer story short is these categories. Yeah, you might see boots across the board, but just like in boxing, a 10-9 round could be razor thin.
Yeah. But you can fix everything. You can be less talented. You could have less power. You could have less speed. You could be less everything, and you can still win the fight. A good game plan, a good punch, a bad weight cut, a bad performance, all of that factors in. It doesn't matter who on paper, who is objective, an objective score from a subjective person, you know, a subjective opinion, I should say. It's you know, that's why we fight the fights, guys.
Prediction time. How will Boots Ennis come out in this fight? I'm very intrigued. He is the favorite on paper. He's the favorite among a lot of boxing fans. But is this the same Boots we saw 2-3 years ago when he was blowing through the welterweight division? Or is this the Boots that we saw against Karen, where he was getting tagged, where he was questioning his skills after the fight, where he was saying, I'm going to 154. I think that is a huge, huge storyline in this fight, but I'm still sticking with Boots. I like Boots by decision. It's plus money right now. I think that Stanionis is too sturdy. I think that Boots is the weight and the age are going to catch up to him when it comes to the power late, but still think he'll look good. I still think there'll be some dicey rounds where Stanionis is kind of taking it to Ennis, but I like Ennis by decision, and this becomes unified champion. But then he says, I'm done, vacates the belts, goes to 154.
I like it. I like what you're saying. Yeah, that's a good, safe bet. I'm going to be unsafe. I'm going Boots takes this fight very seriously. He's gotten with a good nutritionist, a little more focused with the weight cut.
Is that a fact?
No, I'm just saying.
Assuming.
I'm assuming. I'm talking hypotheticals here, buddy. I don't.
I thought maybe you're a nutritionist. I thought you guys have a network. I thought maybe you were up for that gig. They gave it to someone else.
It would make sense for them to do that. I mean, a little more conscious since the weight was an issue last time. But I do think they respect Stanionis and his skills, and they understand what they have in front of them. And I think that making the decision to stay at 47 means that, all right, listen, we got to really buckle in and get this done. And I think Boots goes out there and does what he's supposed to do in a really good fight. I think he actually starts slow, but finds his rhythm. And I'm going to say late round stoppage for Ennis. I think that Stanionis is just a little too there to get hit. And I think once he starts running those numbers, I think the size is going to be a difference. I think the speed's going to be a factor. And there's just these technical flaws that Stanionis presents that Boots, if he is that guy, should be able to take advantage of and get him out of there.
Yeah, you get that at plus 250. Ennis stoppage. Ennis stops him, then he's back. And that's a big exclamation point. I'd be excited. No knock on Stanionis, because I think it's a reason.
I think Stanionis is very, very good.
Right. And no knock on him. But if for the sake of boxing, because that's what we're always looking out for, the health of the sport, if Ennis can get a demonstrative win, like a stoppage, in AC with the fans going crazy, you know, he gives it a great post-fight interview. He calls out some of the other names at 147, but also mentions the guys at 154. And finally, you know, we need these guys. We need fighters like him in boxing to shine. And it's all there for him right here. To become unified, to have all those belts would be a good thing for boxing. I just hope we get a really good fight. May the best man win. Should be a good one. So I like Ennis by decision. Chris is going with Ennis by late stoppage. Both of those are pretty good odds on DraftKings. Yeah, should be a good one. Chris, you're heading to New York. You're getting ready. You're packing up. It's very cold here.
I don't want to hear that. I'm going to pretend it's not. I'm not going to pack like it's cold. I'm just going to hope that it gets warmer by the time I get there.
That's
the weather
foolish.
It's been up and down.
Bro, I wore a winter jacket this morning to get my coffee, and it's April 9th as we record this. But we will bring a lot of content coming your way. Maybe a steak review inside of Keen's.
That's a good idea. Steak review.
One bite. You know the rules. Chris Algieri's steak review. That would
That's
do numbers.
That's good. The one bite rule from steak.
I'm doing it.
We're doing it. We're totally doing
it. Yeah, we'll do like the whole order and everything. Yeah, so we're doing that. We're going to go watch your nephew get his hand raised once again. Heading to this MVP press conference for Taylor Serrano 3, which will be on Netflix. There are pro box fights. You're heading to Maryland?
Yeah, we got fights in Hanover at the Hall Live. Pretty good card, man. Solid card. We got a bunch of the guys from Roach's Gym fighting on the undercard.
You think Lamont will be there?
Lamont, I'm sure will be there. Those guys travel in teams, so.
Get some intel on Lamont, because he's been talking. He just did an interview with Andre Ward, and see how he's feeling about this rematch.
Yeah, I spoke with his father, the coach, Jordan Ward Sr., last weekend in Philly. They came out to the show. So chatted with him a little bit about, you know, the upcoming fight and what's how things are looking. But
what's Hanover got to offer?
I couldn't tell you.
You're gonna find out.
It's my first time. I'll find out.
I'll
do my sightseeing. I'll find something cool to do and do a video in front of, like I did it in the Rocky Steps with Washington. I think it's gonna be my new thing. I'm on location. I might as well find something cool and then do a video to talk.
Good luck. Good luck, Hanover. I think that's what the R words once played.
The R words.
The Washington R words played at in Hanover.
Easy
there. All right, don't get canceled in the last minute of the show. Enjoy your weekend, everybody. Bet with your head, not over it. Keep your hands up at all times. Protect yourselves at all times. Stay out of those DMs. Goodbye.